Greetings, Tacoma. John Doherty here for KTAH 101.9's Climate Talk program, the place where we talk about everything climate-related and always in a respectful way. There's a lot of opinions out there, and every one of them is worth paying attention to. Hey, and just a quick aside here about KTAH 101.9. It's locally broadcast from Tacoma, a low-power FM station, pretty much an all-volunteer operation with a shoestring budget. And the station's making great progress over time, getting more efficient, more professional, more good programming. So thanks to all the folks that are instrumental in making the KTH station a viable and growing operation. If you enjoy the programming on KTAH, you might just go on the website and send them a message saying how much you appreciate what they're doing, and I'm sure they'd be happy to hear any suggestions you might have also. I personally would love to hear from you on any topic related to climate. You can contact me at John, that's J-O-H-N, at cclTacoma.org. CCL is for Citizens Climate Lobby. I'm an activist with Citizens Climate Lobby, and I'll talk a little bit more about activism later on in the program today. As I record this, it's a beautiful day in the Pacific Northwest. Is there any place on Earth where beautiful days can match those we have here in the Northwest? I love living here. The background to all of that is the overcast of the COVID pandemic. And you know, we can draw some parallels with the COVID pandemic and climate change. Looking at what we're doing as a species here, what we did on the lead up to COVID, and we can draw parallels with climate change. So some of the ones I see is a lack of preparation. You know, we really did know that the pandemic was coming. People have been saying it was coming for a long time. And in public forums and writing books about it and so on and so forth, it just seems like it's not in our faces. And if it's not, we're not going to do anything about it. So we didn't really prepare. And by we, I mean pretty much everybody on the face of the earth. Then when it did start showing up, what popped up immediately? Denial that there was actually a problem. No big deal, going to go away pretty soon, not going to impact me much one way or the other. We said that collectively and individually. Then, as the damage did start showing up, we kind of minimized the damage. Well, do you know anybody that's actually had COVID-19 or died from it? Those kind of things. Even though the numbers were pretty much on track with what the experts were telling us was going to happen. Then we started seeing putting short-term financial gain over long-term financial health. I got to acknowledge that it's a tough question. When do we start cranking up the economy again versus protecting against people getting sick? But it's not just a simple matter of economy versus sick people. We have to make good judgments. And to do that, we have to rely on data and people who know what they're talking about. Then along with all of this, it's a worldwide issue. What happens in Spain or Korea impacts us here in the United States. So all of those things are true about climate change as well as about the COVID virus. There's one huge difference, and COVID actually has got the advantage in this particular instance, and that is the COVID's happening fast. Showed up, hit the streets, became an issue, people started dying on a very short time span. Climate change is not like that. It's on a much slower timeline, and as a species, we're not very good at relating to or reacting to things that happen as slowly as climate change is happening. What it all adds up to is that climate change, just like COVID, has got a huge political aspect to it, maybe the most significant aspect of all. So when we talk about climate change and politics, I'll just pose to you the question, would a liberal be more concerned or less concerned about climate change, or would a conservative be more concerned or less concerned about climate change? Well, there's plenty of data on that, and yes, liberals do tend to be more concerned about the environment and climate change than conservatives, but the difference is not as great as you might think. There are lots and lots of conservatives who are worried about the environment, and there are liberals who don't think it's that big a deal. Today I'm going to be talking about a specific case that illustrates my point. There's an organization in the United States called the Climate Leadership Council, and it's basically driven and guided by conservative concepts of economy and environment. The short version, and I'll flesh this out a little bit here in a bit, is that a fee is placed on carbon emissions. Their fee increases over time, and the goal is reducing carbon emissions. The folks who are the driving forces behind this Climate Leadership Council reads like a who's who of American conservatism. Two of the most prominent names are Baker and Schultz. Schultz was the Secretary of State under several different presidents. He was Secretary of Treasury. He was Director of the Office of Management and Budget, and he was also Secretary of Labor. He performed those duties under presidents such as Reagan and Bush. So his conservative credentials are unquestioned. James Baker served as chief of staff for both presidents Reagan and Bush, and he was a secretary of state and a secretary of treasury. Just an aside here, I spent 5 years in the Marine Corps, and I note that both Schultz and Baker were Marines. Schultz, in particular, was a World War II Marine and was involved in combat in the Pacific with the Marines during that time. So as a Marine, I have an automatic bond with these guys. It's just the way it is. By the way, Schultz was born in 1920. That means in December of this year, he's going to be 100 years old and still going strong. So let's talk a bit about what their proposal is actually all about. It starts off with a $40 a ton on carbon emissions. Now, putting a price on carbon emissions is a very common tactic, and there is a good reason for that tactic and the reason it's so common, and that is that there are costs associated with carbon pollution, and the people who are bearing those costs are not the people who are profiting from the business. So it's appropriate that there be a charge to adjust from this market failure of the fossil fuel industry putting pollution out in the environment but not bearing the cost of it. Nothing unique about putting a price on carbon, as in the case of the Climate Leadership Council's proposal. This $40 a ton price escalates over time on a adjusted basis to make sure that our fossil fuel emissions do get down to the point they need to be to provide a safe and secure and healthy environment for us in the future. Of course, if we put a fee on carbon, that means that fossil fuels are going to become more expensive, and an estimate is that that $40 a ton initial fee will add up to about 36 cents a gallon for gasoline. That's just as a kind of benchmark. So what happens to that fee? Well, it's collected at the wellhead or the mine or when a fossil fuel comes across the border, and it's distributed on a per-person basis to everybody in the United States. And estimates are that a family of four would get about $2,000 a year. The reason for returning the money in terms of a fee is basically it helps families who would have difficulty affording more expensive fossil fuel to adjust to the increased expense, and at the same time it makes non-polluting sources of energy such as wind or hydro or solar more desirable financially. And that's the way we want to go, moving towards those cleaner sources of energy. Well, I'll just say once again that politics is everything when it comes to dealing with the future of our climate. The science and the technology are both pretty clear. Doesn't mean they're absolutely clear, but they're pretty clear and certainly clear enough for us to know what needs to be done to create a healthier future for our kids and grandkids. So how does this Baker-Schultz proposal stack up politically? Well, it actually stacks up pretty well. For instance, businesses like the predictability of knowing what their financial future is going to be, what their costs are going to be, as opposed to regulations which can vary drastically over time depending on who's in the White House. And it results in reduced emissions regulation. If we're going to reduce fossil fuel emissions by putting a price on those emissions, then it's not quite as necessary to have regulations, which can be somewhat of a broad-based and not very accurate way of dealing with things like pollution. And then there's the issue of liability. There are all kinds of lawsuits right now versus the fossil fuel industry, and this bill would provide some protection from those lawsuits. Environmentalists basically care about reducing fossil fuel emissions, and this carbon fee, adjusted as necessary, certainly will result in reduced fossil fuel emissions. Economists everywhere have done studies on this, and there are thousands of them, literally thousands of them, who point out the advantage of putting a fee on carbon in terms of reducing carbon emissions. And also, economists tend to favor as much freedom in the market as possible, and putting a fee on carbon is one of the least intrusive ways of dealing with the problem. Now, one of the things I hear people say, and it's understandable why they would say that, why should we do anything if the Indians or the Chinese are pumping out fossil fuel pollution themselves? Good question. And the border adjustment in this Baker-Schultz proposal is intended to address exactly that. That is, a fee would be charged on fossil fuel products coming in from countries that don't have any fee on their fossil fuels. At the same time, there would be a rebate to U.S. firms exporting fossil fuel-based stuff outside the country so they could compete on a level playing field. This process would encourage countries around the world who want to deal with the United States to put the fee on their own fossil fuels, and rather than sending the money to the United States. I think sometimes we forget how big our consumer economy is here in the United States. Our consumer economy is three times bigger than China's consumer economy, which is the second biggest in the world. So our consumer economy dwarfs the rest of the world, and anybody that wants to be successful economically, any country that wants to be successful, is going to have to deal with the United States. It's just a way of us being integral in getting the rest of the world to pay attention to their fossil fuel emissions. Finally, consumers are what better off after the dividend is paid? That would be most consumers. People who are the wealthiest, most affluent families would be worse off, but most families would be better off with the dividend, including the increase in price in the fossil fuels that they consume. Now, I mentioned up front that I'm an activist with Citizens Climate Lobby. Citizens Climate Lobby are proponents of a bill that's presently in the House. It's H.R. 763, the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. This act differs to an extent from the Baker-Schultz proposal, but Secretary Schultz has expressed support for H.R. 763. And I'm just going to quote from him here for a second regarding H.R. 763. "The urgency to reduce emissions is now painfully obvious. I fully support the Bipartisan Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act. Its predictability mitigates price uncertainty, and its full dividend return makes it politically durable, both essential to markets investing in the next great industrial revolution. This bill prices carbon in an efficient, effective, and equitable way that will enhance our national security, help level the playing field in world trade, and redeem America's leadership role, all without growing the size of government." So there's lots of matches there between the Baker-Schultz proposal and the H.R. 763. Which one to pick? Well, you know, there's lots and lots of proposals out there all over the political spectrum. Take a look, do your homework. Most of all, to me, it seems important that we not ever allow the perfect to be the enemy of the good. That's what I worry about most of all, that even though the vast majority of Americans are concerned about the climate and the environment, that we spend our time squabbling over which is the best solution, and result being that we don't do anything. Well, that's it for today. I've enjoyed talking with you as always. Once again, I'd love to hear from you, john@ccltacoma.org. And for now, reminding you, as always, live like the mountain is out. Take care.